Chapter 24. I was faint, and I think I am better out of doors, she said mechanically, and disappeared outside. Fortunately for her, the milk in the revolving churn at that moment changed its squashing for a decided flick-flack. "'Tis coming!" cried Mrs. Crick, and the attention of all was called off from Tess. That fair sufferer soon recovered herself externally, but she remained much depressed all the afternoon. When the evening milking was done, she did not care to be with the rest of them, and went out of doors wandering along she knew not whither. She was wretched, oh so wretched, at the perception that to her companions the dairyman's story had been rather a humorous narration than otherwise. None of them but herself seemed to see the sorrow of it. To a certainty, not one knew how cruelly it touched the tender place in her experience. The evening sun was now ugly to her, like a great inflamed wound in the sky. Only a solitary cracked voice reed sparrow greeted her from the bushes by the river, in a sad, machine-made tone, resembling that of a past friend whose friendship she had outworn. In these long June days the milkmaids, and, indeed, most of the household, went to bed at sunset or sooner, the morning work, before milking being so early and heavy at a time of full pairs. Tess usually accompanied her fellows upstairs. Tonight, however, she was the first to go to their common chamber, and as he had dozed, when the other girls came in, she saw them undressing in the orange light of the vanished sun, which flushed their forms with its color. She dozed again, but she was reawakened by their voices, and quietly turned her eyes towards them. Neither of her three chamber companions had got into bed. They were standing in a group, in their nightgowns, barefooted, at the window, the last red rays of the west still warming their faces and necks, and the walls around them. All were watching somebody in the garden with deep interest, their three faces close together. A jovial and round one, a pale one with dark hair, and a fair one whose tresses were auburn. Don't push. You can see as well as I, said Reddy, the auburn-haired and youngest girl, without removing her eyes from the window. Tis no use for you to be in love with him any more than me, Reddy Priddle, said jolly-faced Marion, the eldest, slyly. His thoughts be of other cheeks than thine. Reddy Priddle still looked, and the other looked again. There he is again, cried Is Hewitt, the pale girl with dark damp hair and keenly cut lips. You needn't say anything, Is, answered Reddy, for I zid you kissing his shade. What did you see her doing? Asked Marion. Why, he was standing over the way tub to let off the way, and the shade of his face came upon the wall behind, close to Is, who was standing there filling a vat. She put her mouth against the wall, and kissed the shade of his mouth. I zid her, though he didn't. Oh, Is Hewitt, said Marion. A rosy spot came into the middle of Is Hewitt's cheek. Well, there was no harm in it, she declared, with attempted coolness. And if I be in love, why, and so is Reddy too, and so be you, Marion, come to that. Marion's full face could not blush past its chronic pinkness. I, she said, had a tail. Ah, there he is again. Dear eyes, dear face, dear Mr. Clare. There you've owned it. So have you, so have we all, said Marion, with the dry frankness of complete indifference to opinion. It is silly to pretend otherwise amongst ourselves, though we need not own it to other folks. I would just marry and tomorrow. So would I and more, murmured Is Hewitt. And I too, whispered the more timid Reddy. The listener grew warm. We can't all marry him, said Is. We shan't, either of us. Which is worse still, said the eldest. Tee, there he is again. They all three blew him a silent kiss. Why? Asked Reddy quickly. Because he likes Tess Durbyfield best, said Marion, lowering her voice. I have watched him every day, and have found it out. There was a reflective silence. But she don't care anything for Anne, at length breathed Reddy. Well, I sometimes think that too. But how silly all this is, said Is Hewitt impatiently. Of course he won't marry any one of us, or Tess either, a gentleman's son, who's going to be a great landowner and farmer abroad. More likely to ask us to come in as farm hands at so much a year. One side, and another side, and Marion's plump figure side biggest of all. Somebody in bed hard by side too. Tears came into the eyes of Reddy Priddle, the pretty red-haired youngest, the last bud of the Paradells, so important in the county annals. They watched silently a little longer, their three faces still close together as before, and the triple hues of their hair mingling. But the unconscious Mr. Clare had gone indoors, and they saw him no more, and, the shades beginning to deepen, they crept into their beds. In a few minutes they heard him ascend the ladder to his own room. Marion was soon snoring, but it did not drop into forgetfulness for a long time. Reddy Priddle cried herself to sleep. The deeper passion Tess was very far from sleeping even then. This conversation was another of the bitter pills as he had been obliged to swallow that day. Scarce the least feeling of jealousy arose in her breast. For that matter she knew herself to have the preference. Being more finely formed, better educated, and, though the youngest except Reddy, more woman than either, she perceived that only the slightest ordinary care was necessary for holding her own in Angel Clare's heart against these her candid friends. But the grave question was, ought she to do this? There was, to be sure, hardly a ghost of a chance for either of them, in a serious sense. But there was, or had been, a chance of one or the other inspiring him with a passing fancy for her, and enjoying the pleasure of his attentions, while he stayed here. Such unequal attachments had led to marriage, and as he had heard from Mrs. Crick, that Mr. Clare had one day asked, in a laughing way, what would be the use of his marrying a fine lady, and all the while 10,000 acres of colonial pasture to feed, and cattle to rear, and corn to reap. A farm woman would be the only sensible kind of wife for him. But whether Mr. Clare had spoken seriously or not, why should she, who could never conscientiously allow any man to marry her now, and who had religiously determined that she never would be tempted to do so, draw off Mr. Clare's attention from other women, for the brief happiness of sunning herself in his eyes, while he remained at Talbothays? XXII, they came downstairs yawning next morning. But skimming and milking were proceeded with as usual, and they went indoors to breakfast. Dairyman Crick was discovered stamping about the house. He had received a letter, in which a customer had complained that the butter had a twang, and begged, so he have, said the dairyman, who held in his left hand a wooden slice on which a lump of butter was stuck. Why, yes, taste for yourself. Several of them gathered round him. And Mr. Clare tasted, Tess tasted, also the other indoor milkmaids, one or two of the milking men, and last of all Mrs. Crick, who came out from the waiting breakfast table. There certainly was a twang. The dairyman, who had thrown himself into abstraction to better realize the taste, and so divine the particular species of noxious weed to which it appertained, suddenly exclaimed, 'Tis garlic. And I thought there wasn't a blade left in that mead. Then all the old hands remembered that a certain dry mead, into which a few of the cows had been admitted of late, had, in years gone by, spoilt the butter in the same way. The dairyman had not recognized the taste at that time, and thought the butter bewitched. We must overhaul that mead, he resumed. This mustn't continue. All having armed themselves with old pointed knives, they went out together. As the inimical plant could only be present in very microscopic dimensions, to have escaped ordinary observation, to find it seemed rather a hopeless attempt in the stretch of rich grass before them. However, they formed themselves into line, all assisting, owing to the importance of the search. The dairyman at the upper end with Mr. Clare, who had volunteered to help, then Tess, Marion, Is Hewitt, and Reddy, then Bill Lewell, Jonathan, and the married dairywomen Beck Nibbs, with her woolly black hair and rolling eyes, and Flaxen Francis, consumptive from the winter damps of the water meads who lived in their respective cottages. With eyes fixed upon the ground, they crept slowly across a strip of the field, returning a little further down in such a manner that, when they should have finished, not a single inch of the pasture, but would have fallen under the eye of some one of them. It was a most tedious business, not more than half a dozen shoots of garlic being discoverable in the whole field. Yet such was the herb's pungency, that probably one bite of it by one cow had been sufficient to season the whole dairy's produce for the day. Differing one from another in natures and moods so greatly as they did, they yet formed, bending, a curiously uniform row, automatic, noiseless. And an alien observer passing down the neighboring lane might well have been excused for massing them as odds. As they crept along, stooping low to discern the plant, a soft yellow gleam was reflected from the buttercups into their shaded faces, giving them an elfish, moonlit aspect, though the sun was pouring upon their backs in all the strength of noon. Angel Clare, who communistically stuck to his rule of taking part with the rest in everything, glanced up now and then. It was not, of course, by accident that he walked next to Tess. "Well, how are you?" he murmured. "Very well, thank you, sir," she replied demurely. As they had been discussing a score of personal matters only half an hour before, the introductory style seemed a little superfluous. But they got no further in speech just then. They crept and crept, the hem of her petticoat just touching his gaiter, and his elbow sometimes brushing hers. At last the dairyman, who came next, could stand it no longer. "Upon my soul and body, this here stooping do fairly make my back open and shut," he exclaimed, straightening himself slowly with an excruciated look till quite upright. "And you, matey Tess, you wasn't well a day or two ago. This will make your head ache finely. Don't do any more. If you feel fainty, leave the rest to finish it." Dairyman Crick withdrew, and Tess dropped behind. Mr. Clare also stepped out of line, and began privateering about for the weed. When she found him near her, her very tension at what she had heard the night before made her the first to speak. "Don't they look pretty?" she said. "Who? Izzy Hewitt and Reddy." Tess had moodily decided that either of these maidens would make a good farmer's wife, and that she ought to recommend them, and obscure her own wretched charms. "Pretty? Well, yes, they are pretty girls, fresh looking. I have often thought so. Though, poor dears, prettiness won't last long. Oh no, unfortunately. They are excellent dairy women. Yes. Though not better than you." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.